Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Your ultimate culinary companion.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.
Welcome to another episode of Dishing It Out with me, Gary O'Hanlon.
And me, Gareth Mullins.
And coming up on today's show, we'll have our usual ingredient of the week, our culinary conundrums, and we have the master. I think we might have said that for Michael Villanen as well, but we have the real master in studio today, Nevin Maguire, the absolute legend that he is, a good pal of ours. And we tried to have him on before Christmas, but thankfully
we... Good name in Irish.
Yeah, he's just brilliant, a really good guy, really good with his time. Well, he was the inspiration behind when I went to came back from Boston to Longford. Every man and his dog said to me, "What are you doing going to Longford?" And I said, "Well, do you know what? If Nevin can bring them up there, there's hope if it's good enough, you know." And I took a lot of, you know, faith in that, like that he's managed to bring people, even through the troubles. His mommy, God rest her, whenever she had the restaurant, and then when it went down into Nevin's hands. You know, I think the place might have been blown up at some stage even. Like, yeah, I might be wrong in that. But
talk to him about all of that.
It has really...
One of the biggest compliments I think you can pay a chef is that, and I think Mick hit on it a little bit last week, is the fact that he's all about hospitality.
Yeah.
And I think anybody that's ever been in Nevin's company, be it at a cookery class, or you're lucky enough to dine with him, or you met him at a demo... The guy is just one of the nicest people.
He's a heart of gold, man. Yeah.
He understands that running restaurants and hotels and hospitality is about taking care of people. Mm. And I think that's where a lot of restaurants get it wrong. And I think Mick alluded to it last week. And that's another fella that's at the very top of his game. So, and I don't know whether I think maybe people are seeing that insight into our world a little bit more, that that's what we're all about. Anyway, really excited for Nevin.
Yeah, so that's coming up. So don't go anywhere.
So now we've got one of our nicest parts of the week, and it's our ingredient of the week. And I thought this would be one of the easiest things in the world to do, but I kind of, I just want to make sure that
we ran out of grub quick enough.
We ran out of it, but we want to do stuff that people are finding value in. So Gary, what are you going with this week?
I'm going to go with cabbage.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, you've got Yorkley, you've got Savoy, Hispy, red cabbage, Dutch cabbage, Cavolo Nero. Napa.
Beautiful.
And there's probably more that I can't even think on, you know. I absolutely, you know, obviously this is going to be coming out in a week or two's time, but this is actually Paddy's week that we're recording here. And, you know, cabbage really comes to the fore, I suppose, okay. And Paddy's weekend, you know, we did our Paddy's week special.
I think a lot of people's memory of cabbage would be growing up, and you know when cabbage is overcooked, it has that smell.
Oh, yeah.
And as a kid, when blading cabbage is overcooked, and you're like, oh my, not that anyone ever would have overcooked cabbage in my house, but you know that smell of cabbage water, oh my God.
I always remember the first time I just did a little chiffon out of cabbage, right, sautéed it in oil, finished it with butter and black pepper. Rang the old doll and went, what was we putting on the cabbage at 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock in the morning on the side of a Stanley Ridge? Fucking 6 hours.
In cold water.
And then frying the shite out of it for another hour. And I still love it the way the old boy used to do it, but I'm telling you now, we used to go to the shore, go lift wild oysters, do whatever the old boy would throw on. He would rip up a full head of cabbage like a cave. Yeah, we pull it out of the garden, rip it up like a caveman. Throw it, cover it with cold water, put a lock of salt in it, put it to the side of the range. We'd go away for the day lifting oysters, mussels, periwinkles, whatever the season was at the time. Come back, strain it then, and then he'd fry that and then give it to you like with bag. I mean, it was gorgeous and I still cook it the odd time like that. But cabbage is just so versatile. It's just an amazing vegetable. You know, it grows so easily in Ireland as well. I mean, the climate doesn't bother it in the slightest, as you know, Gareth. And I just love it, man. You know, I mean,
Do you know, is bubble and squeak a thing up in around Donegal?
Yeah, I think it's more an English thing. You know we're close to the border, but it's, you know, don't you be one of these bollocks now they fucking call us.
No, we would have had a bubble and squeak growing up. So when we had bacon and cabbage, the following day, my dad would chop it all up. So we chopped the bacon, chop the cabbage and mix it all with the mashed potato.
Yeah.
And it's a hash really.
Yeah.
And then fry it with a fried egg on top. I mean,
yeah, nice.
One of the nicest things you've ever
Beautiful, man. Yeah, would you just No flour or anything, no. You just have a dry mashed potato as your binder.
You used to pan fry it. Yeah, you used to make a mix, basically. Yeah. So like making a
croquette mix, basically, yeah.
But he'd chop an onion or a scallion, and then he'd fry it off. My dad's very good.
Jizzy, the Isle breed loves a raw onion, sir.
Lash them in there.
Mashed buds with a lock of raw onions and scallions. Giddy up. Class, man. You know, very absolutely.
Beautiful thing.
Yeah, I've got dishes where I've got black truffle and poached lobster tail, and I wrap it in like Savoy cabbage leaf, and you know, you tie it up and steam it and open it up. I mean, I could go on all day. The bacon and cabbage train that we talked about a few weeks ago. It's an old Thornton dish that I would have learned through my time in the old post. We do that with a Chardonnay leek cream, and but just at its best is parboiled, drained and fried. Not as long as the oil boy used to do it, but a bit of a nouvelle variation on what he would have done. And I love that. Yeah, finish it with a wee bit of butter. Let the butter noisette, like let it brown a bit, and then black pepper. Loads of like freshly cracked black pepper. I love a bit of heat. Turnip and cabbage takes really well to peppery, like white pepper in particular. I love it. How would you like cabbage or any kind of way you get it?
Crispy cabbage, which might be different.
Sweeter.
For some people, like, and I think the only way to cook crispy is over a barbecue, over a grill. It takes so well to a flame.
Yeah.
Because when the leaves, the outer leaves starting to caramelize a little bit, pop it onto a tray, drizzle it with some good olive oil, maybe some garlic, a little bit of lemon, and then roast it in the oven. And that really will take center stage as a dish. Yeah. We do a really nice dish where we make a tahini and lemon dressing, grilled piece of hispy on top.
Nice.
And some chopped hazelnuts toasted. Really, really delicious, really versatile vegetables. And I was wondering where you were going to go with it, but I think with us being Irish chefs, the first thing you think of is bacon cabbage.
Yeah.
Because obviously the daddy of the way you grew up,
I have this salad dish that I do, like it's really beautiful in kale season. It's a marinated kale salad. Like, and if you make a sort of a slightly more vinegary cider vinegar dressing, but it's got a wee bit more vinegar than you might be comfortable with. And you put that on the...
Wilts the leaves a little bit.
You put it on the York leaf about 25 minutes before you actually want to make the salad. Then I do it with like egg white, bacon lardons, a little bit of like crushed roasted hazelnut and a few other wee bits and pieces in there. And it's a beautiful salad, but the vinegar breaks down the cabbage and almost cooks it. It's almost like a ceviche type
feel.
You know what I mean? It needs at least 25 minutes to half an hour. Really elegant things you can do with cabbage too. What are you going with, Gareth?
So I'm going to go with an ingredient that only comes to light in another month or two, really, and it's the Wexford strawberry.
Yeah.
And Irish strawberries in season are as good as anywhere in the world. Being in a hotel, sometimes we need to get strawberries outside the season, and that's just part of working in a big hotel. Sometimes guests want to eat some berries, and it's kind of one of those things I always think to myself, well, I just say no for most of the year, but it's a difficult thing to do. When I talk about seasonal cookery all the time, I try and stay away from, but occasionally I have to use it. When Wexford strawberries come into season, and it's gas the way we know them as Wexford strawberries all around the country, because they're sold and grown just in Wexford.
Yeah.
But they've really...
branded them, really.
Haven't they?
Yeah.
Like, and, you know, I've memories, and my own children have memories of stopping at the side of the road and buying the strawberries off. When the strawberry sales,
I bet we get Nevin chatting about strawberries. He'll go into one about Pat Clark.
He absolutely
loves Pat Clark.
I am around Swords, down into Russian.
Keelings are amazing.
Yeah, they're up there around the corner.
That's right. I was going
to
say
the growers now will start to. You see people selling them at the side of the road. Not yet. We're a little bit early, but it's just the sweetness that they get.
Yeah,
it's because they see so much soil. That's really why our strawberries are so good. A lot of the strawberries that are on the market tend to be, I'm going to throw a little bit of a word out here, hydroponically grown.
Yeah.
So they're grown in tubes and the tubes are fed with water. So there's this constant saturation.
It's a fake environment. Yeah.
But they do produce strawberries that you look at them and go, oh, here we go, Flavor Town. And then you eat it.
Nothing.
And there's nothing.
No.
Like there's absolutely nothing. But then when you get to driving in the summer and it's too warm, and I remember the days where the car didn't have leading air conditioning and it stopped. You bought this punter, your parents bought this punter of strawberries. They're real early memories of food I have that I'm only starting to relive them now because of this.
And that smell, once you start eating them, bursting them open.
Unbelievable.
Well, I've been really fortunate. Like for years, I've been cooking down in Kelly's in Rosslare for a cookery week every year. But we do a family holiday down there, me and the kids, right? But in the summer, you're in Rosslare. Eugene Callan, one of the best chefs in the country. I just think Kelly's in Rosslare I love that hotel on a level that it's got the best French wine in Ireland as well. Like the Bill Kelly's wine list is just world class. It's so decently Montche by the bucket load down there, right? I tell you,
it's cold.
I go deep.
Socks involved, maybe.
Anybody in the dining room down there knows they bring the ice bucket. They don't even wait for me to ask for it. But they do a soft serve. They do a soft serve ice cream. So two things, right, that really stand out at dinner. The menu changes every night. It's unbelievable, right? But you get potatoes in the jacket in the potato season, which kind of mirrors the strawberry season, right? Yeah. And they're always, always... During the summer, the desserts will be four or five. There's an unbelievable pastry section there, but you'll get Wexford strawberries, cracker, and soft serve ice cream any night of the week.
Cracker, a wafer.
Just a wafer, yeah. And I'll tell you, man, I'd just be hanging for the spuds, number one, and then for the Wexford strawberries.
Confidence, but to be able to serve potatoes just steamed,
yeah,
a big knob of butter. And that's something that I've definitely learned as my career has went on, that really. Like serving Wexford strawberries, probably dusted in a little bit of icing sugar on some really good ice cream. It's as good as it's going to get.
Oh, man. It just
you can go away and start making wheels and all the other blade.
Well, look, you listen to that. I listen to our own podcast. Do we laugh at the fact that we think we're brilliant, actually, by the way, in case anyone...
Well, I laugh at the fact that you think you're brilliant.
Like the amount of times that I've heard you say that, and you're spot on, you know, like as you get older... It's a mixture. You couldn't give two fiddlers fucks what anyone thinks of what you do. And equally, you'll just become really confident as a cook. Like, and as you say, stop trying to be a hero with a potato. Stop adding money to it. Stop peeling it. Stop manipulating it. Just boil it in cold water, salted water, and then serve it with butter and parsley if you want to get fancy with it. It's nice. But Jesus, man.
You really, and I mean, you've had the privilege of working overseas for the past while, as have I in my career. And you really see how much other countries celebrate things that they're really good at.
Yeah.
There's a few like Parmesan, Parma ham, Iberico ham in Spain.
Roquefort cheese,
exactly. You could go on all day about it, right? And I think us as a nation are really getting better at going, actually, you know what? We are amazing.
Well, I think that's where Ireland's really at its best. You know, we also spoke a while ago about Irish chefs and, you know, kind of the Paddy's Day episode or leading up into that, and maybe perceptions of Irish cooks around the world and what have you. But for me, I think where Ireland really stands out above the crowd is the raw ingredient. You know, from dairy to beef to poultry to pork, venison, you know, all of the above, you know what I mean? Like there's potatoes. There's lots of...
We're definitely getting better at telling that food.
And then
story.
It's telling the story, actually, and throwing it out there.
Come here, we're going to be talking to one of the masters of it. Yeah. Evan, like, I mean, that's what he's at. He's been telling the Irish food story for years. And he also tells the international food story so well with all of his travel programs.
Yeah.
That he does.
And he's been so generous, you know. Like, he had me on his program. I think a couple of programs I've done for him now, like, you know, he's done the Midlands, he's done the coastlines, he's done railway, Portugal, the country, as you say. But I think the really nice thing about Nevin is he loves shining a light on other chefs. Like, he never ever once comes across as somebody that hogs the limelight just for himself. I mean, you look at the show, you have 6, 7, 8 chefs per season that maybe have never done TV. And he'll ease them in, get them on
but
there.
Also, like what we're doing here is shining the light on these ingredients. And I suppose what this section is about is teaching home cooks. What probably comes a little bit second nature to us is trying to identify ingredients when they're absolutely singing. And what I mean by that is that the season is right now. Now is when you should be eating them because when they're at the best. So all across the summer, stop your car, stick out your few bob in your wallet, hand it to that person, buy your potatoes off them, buy your strawberries off them, and don't mess around with them too much when you get home. Just treat them nice and simply, and I promise you, it'll elevate the food on your table.
Yeah.
Okay, nice one.
Well said. All right, so it's taken us deep into season two to get the master into studio.
Not for the want to try.
Yeah. Oh, well, well, to be fair, I pulled a Darren Anderton. I pulled a sick note a few weeks ago and cancelled on Nevin. Nev Maguire, McNean House, you're very welcome.
Great
to
see you, lads. Congratulations on all the success. So well done.
It's going all right, yeah. We're really relying on you now to give us a wee boost at the tail end of season two. Yeah, I'm faltering with this boy here across me, you know what I mean? So things are going good, actually. Yeah, the audience, everybody we asked to come on have said yes. Shock horror.
And sure, why wouldn't they?
I know, yeah. The crack's been good, actually.
That's what it's all about. Engagement and a bit of fun and food.
Food and it's all crack, aye. But usually we're chatting Man United, Nevin.
I know.
We've got a Lonely Hearts WhatsApp group that we're part of. And it's just gone from sad to sadder over the last 10 years. But today it's all about McNean House, you, your life. How's things are going? How's life anyway? Good.
Never been better.
You look great,
genuine.
Man. You do. You look brilliant.
I'm trying. Trying to be a little bit healthier and fitter and just, you know.
Are
you?
Always
a struggle. I'm 50 now and, you know, I suppose.
That's right. You're the big 5-0.
Big 5-0. Getting old. Yeah. I'm a twin, you see. And a lot of people wouldn't know that. So he's a woodwork teacher in Selbridge. So
he teaches woodwork.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he does.
Creative too.
He's secondary school and he does the woodwork and technical drawing and loves it, so he does. So
are you any good at that, crack? Because I've often said on here that I'm beyond useless. Apart from being able to cook, I can do nothing. Can you stick a joint together?
No, they're definitely not.
Isn't it amazing how some people just get a gift for something and others, you know, just can do absolutely, it just looks like double dutch to you, you know?
Speaking of that, so where is the early days of Nevin Maguire? How did it all start?
Wow.
I know Gary and I would know a little bit of your background, but someone that never heard of you, how did food start in your life?
I suppose my mother, because we're from family of nine, and that's where I got the love. Yeah, there's nine of us, five boys, four girls. I'm a twin, you obviously know that. And I suppose mum and dad opened the restaurant in 1989, and all the family worked in the restaurant. Yeah. So a lot of people wouldn't know that we closed our restaurant from 73 to 89, was bombed twice. During the trouble, so
yeah, we were chatting about that earlier in the intro. I mentioned that because I'm pretty sure that McNean House got blown up because you're on the border,
absolutely,
of Enniskillen, really, pretty much. How close to the border?
Well, we're about 15 minutes from Enniskillen. We're about 2 minutes from Belcoo, which is literally across the. And a lot of my staff are from Fermanagh.
And was it always a restaurant?
People
can stay there now as well.
Yeah, I suppose we always had maybe 4 or 5 bedrooms. Now we have 20 bedrooms in a tent.
Is there that many rooms now? Wow,
amazing,
good man. Wow.
Cookery school. Yeah, I do love the school. I love the way it's kind of organically kind of grown over the years. You know, now we do one sitting. Like COVID changed everything. We're not doing two sittings. We have 60 people.
A lot of chefs in restaurants, the chef owners went the same way. They were just shortening the menus, less numbers, maybe less nights, but then just the standards, they say, like they can focus more on a smaller number and it's consistent all the time.
Yeah. And I think to hold on to your staff for us, you know, we saw, like, when we reopened after COVID, 50 of the original staff came back. Like, we have 60 staff now. We used to do 100 every Sunday lunch and 50 at night, and now we close on a Sunday.
Do you?
Yeah, honestly, it's probably the best decision we've ever done in our business, closing on a Sunday. And, you know...
chefs love that, I'd say.
But all staff do.
Yeah.
Genuinely, guys, because, you know, it's an industry that's busy at the weekends. We were full every Sunday night, 3 services. And to have a weekend day off, it's a deal breaker. Truthfully, I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah.
And then we close 2 weeks at Christmas. And this year, for the first year, we're closing a week in June to break up the year because, you know, we're lucky. We're full nearly every night.
Aye. Right.
We do get cancellations, but we're not big.
Yeah.
We are very lucky that we have a consistent
business. Going back to the early days again. So when was your first time going into the business? If you said you were all there. Very early.
Yeah, it was. I mean, food has changed so much, as you know. Like
your mammy had you on the dish early, I'd say.
And that's it. Even the spuds. And all the family worked in it. You know, when you think food has changed, it was mixed grill, it was steaks. The mum was like a kind of hotel manager trained at Calview Street and then opened up. I think they bought the building for £1,000.
Wow.
In 1965 and then started opening up and dad was front of house and all the family. So it's changed incredibly.
Yeah.
We used to open up like 5, maybe 6 days a week, if I'm right. And we used to open up for lunch and dinner. And like there was no consistency.
So was the other 9 completely, the other 8 completely useless in the
kitchen? No. I need to be careful.
Sucker.
Well, I was like, only crazy one, you're probably saying. So I suppose my sisters worked front of house. My brother, my twin brother, he was front of house too. He was the wine waiter, but he's actually a pioneer, and which is funny. And then all the family from peeling potatoes to washing. So
he'd be laying through his teeth when he was saying absolutely. How nice the wine was.
Absolutely. I'd recommend this. But, you know, a family business, there's we try to keep that ethos to this day still.
Yeah.
And there's something very personal. And for me, like, we're open 36 years this year, which is incredible.
Wow. That's unbelievable.
It is, you know.
And look, going back to when you say it was bombed, I mean, was anybody hurt at that time? Was it closed?
No, it was the UVF. It was. We got warning. I was only a baby, so I really... Or
those
young
bastards.
Child.
Yeah.
I can't really remember.
Yeah.
Gary, you know.
You're
living near the border. It was a tough time.
I tell you, man.
It was. It was.
Yeah.
Definitely.
God forgive me.
Definitely.
Am I allowed to say that is.
But you know what? It's all behind us. And that's the key and thing has changed, you know, the whole business.
I spent a year in Stormont. My first job after college was in Stormont during the Good Friday Peace Agreement. Yeah, I lived in East Belfast when I was 19, for a long time. And, you know, being in Ermelton, 20 minutes from there, 20 minutes from the border, predominantly Protestant town, it's an old plantation town, Ermelton. But there was we never knew what hatred was. And then I went to Belfast, East Belfast. I remember, like, one day a boy telling me to get out of a shop. And I locked me and him in it for 20 fucking minutes.
Wow.
I can tell you now. Yeah. I was in just getting Christmas on a split or whatever. And he says, get out, you fiending bastard. Wow. To me, you know. And I went, are you all right, man? And I looked around me and there was one of them wee latches on the door. And I locked the front door and batted him.
Yeah.
And I did. I really did. Because I never had any hatred, you know. And I just thought to myself, geez, is there ever going to be peace up here? Because, like, people really hate each other, you know.
Yeah.
I found it. Like, I was shocked, you know what I mean? I remember just going, like, you know, half my buddies are Protestants and we're the best of pals. But there was genuine hatred up there. And, you know, when you are amongst that.
That's true.
I couldn't do that now. I'm 45 now. I'd be terrified now, you know.
Or maybe you don't know, but how did the business bounce back from that?
Yeah.
Well, I suppose. It was a bit of that. And then I suppose I was lucky I got a break in the afternoon show. I was on that for every Tuesday for 5 years.
So then you decided to go to college and you figured out that you wanted to be a chef and you went off the train. And
so I went into Niskillen. So that was, well, I actually played for Killybegs and I wasn't accepted. Okay. That is the reality.
Well,
so there's a story in that for young chefs because it's like a road.
Yeah.
You follow your heart, you follow your dreams, and it wasn't meant to be. So I went into Fermanagh College. I was into college, then I was teaching there for 5 years. So that gave me a bit of confidence. Like, my head chef, Carmel, she's with me.
She's
2 years.
Great, yeah.
She was my student.
Well,
so it's evolved like that. So it's lovely when you have.
How long was Glenn with you?
Glenn was with me 16 years.
Wow.
Great guy.
I love him.
Glenn,
Spurs man, head chef. You'd be here.
You'd like him. Yes. One of my best friends.
We had Una. She spoke very fondly of her time.
Una Leonard. Yeah.
How challenging her time was with you, but she spoke so highly of how she was treated up with you.
Yeah, I don't know if you heard it, but you should listen to it because the way she spoke about you. Imelda, the team, Glenn, Carmel. It was, to the point where it saved the girl's life nearly.
Wow.
Like, it was unbelievable the way I didn't know Una. And she started saying, you know, we were like basically, thank God that was the kitchen you were working in.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm so proud of her success. She was a gorgeous girl, really talented. And the way she's flourished and opened up and with her cookbook, like, she's a gorgeous girl. And, you know, you try and treat staff the way we look at it. Is the way my mum said, with respect. We'll all have bad days, but the good days will outweigh them.
Aye.
Simple as that. And I think respect works both ways. Yeah, and it definitely does. And it's not a day that I don't learn. Like, we're, as I said, 36 years open. We have a really core, like, one woman's working for us for 50 years, for working for my family. Isn't that amazing?
Wow.
Where do you get that? You know, like, that loyalty is just special. So it is.
Yeah. I mean, you obviously got the TV shows. You've got all the work with Duns.
How important do you attribute that to the success of the business?
Wow, I think it's about having a consistent business and probably doing it one and doing it right. I'll tell you a good story. When I was very young, I was offered to go to Chelsea Football Club. You would know this. First of all,
I've heard you say.
And I said, no way, well, I'm going to Chelsea. So I was. They wanted to do an Irish restaurant and they wanted me to go over as head chef. I probably was about 22, 23. No, definitely not. Mr. Cook. No.
You're a good left peg on you. We didn't know about.
No, definitely not. That's, there's no hidden secrets there. So
Chopper Maguire.
Yeah, Chopper Maguire.
But there's a nice story to this. So the managing director came over, spent time. We bought him to the Ulster final.
Right.
And actually, Cavan were in it. And he couldn't get over that these were footballers who never got paid. Like, he'd never seen anything like that. And obviously, I got him a chef. I think it was a chef from Galway who used to work in Drumcon House. Can't remember his name. So I got him fixed up with him to go and be his head chef. But I kind of politely declined, and then I was offered to come up to Dublin and once in Paris. I know you've been there. And I just love where I live. I'm just happy at what I do. And, you know, now that we have a business that is viable.
And was it to open a restaurant in Chelsea, or was it to become head chef?
Head chef.
Because I know Marco did something
didn't he?
He's got a restaurant in
Chelsea Village.
Bridge. Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah. Frankie Dettori maybe. Or
that's right.
As far as I know. I sneaked in there, pretended to be.
Now, Gary, if it was Man United, we might have reconsidered. But
I know. It'd be hard to turn down United. Could you?
Nah, probably not.
You'd have to take. You'd have
if they're if they're playing good now, Gary. You know, if they were.
But they're paying you, right?
You're right.
That and as far as the business is concerned, then, like with TV and everything else, like do you still feel you would have been able to? I mean, obviously the restaurant's been brilliant and it's good, and it doesn't matter what you're doing on TV or what the program is, if the restaurant isn't good, they're not coming. They would be coming anyway. Would you think they would? I mean, I imagine they would be anyway.
It does help,
I suppose. It
gives
spread.
You a platform, and you know, I'm done over 200 shows. I'm doing now TV, you know, my own shows for nearly 15 years.
But you have a great squad too, though, Nevin. The same boys all the time, isn't
you know,
it?
Yeah. They know your strengths, they know your weaknesses, and you're respectful of the producer, the chef that you have. But like, I suppose when I finished college, I went to work in Roscoff, and I was there. They had their one star. And that was a really tough kitchen. And I saw a lot of abuse. So I worked there for 3 months, and I worked from 9 until all the chefs in college used to finish up at 3:30. I stayed until 10:30. And then after 3 months, I said, you know, can I get a reference? And he said, who the effing hell do you think you are? You're never going to make it as a chef.
The prick.
I said, I swear to God.
Right.
So I met him recently at a show.
That's him off the show.
And no, I didn't mean like that. But you know, it kind of drives you and motivates you. And then after that, I remember going to work
in.
That's true.
Frankie worked there. You ever asked Frankie about burning a tray at Duck Confit?
No way.
He was there in the early days when they got the star as well, I think. And it was one of the first kitchens he was in, proper kitchens. But I always remember saying, it was this time that he burned the tray at Duck Confit. But I could still see, 20-something years later, the fear in his eyes when he'd be telling the story, trying to hide them on ranking.
Then, Nevin, what was...
Then after that, I went to work in Luxembourg. No, sorry, into Germany. And it was a one Michelin star restaurant, but they had, let me say that, over 100 chefs in the kitchens.
Wow.
And I remember the first day, guys, you'll appreciate this. They opened up the meat fridge, Irish beef, Irish lamb. They said, wow, it's the best. And I felt really, I was there for 3 months, then went back home. Then when I won the Bailey's Young Chef of the Year, I went to work
that
for Leah Lester.
The
Eurotop. That was a very special occasion for me. So I went to work with a chef called Leah Lester. She's the only woman to win the Book of Store, which was the best cook of the world, it's called.
Yeah.
So she was a great supporter of me, and I had her on two of my shows, which, you know, you're nervous cooking for your mentor.
Yeah.
Or she was cooking for me, should I say. But she was incredible. And she used all Irish beef, Irish butter, Irish cream. Came over and stayed in my house. Loved the dairy. For that endorsement, you feel very proud to be Irish.
It's amazing,
isn't it?
I mean, I know you came down to me in Viewmount, but we remarked on it earlier, like that, you know, I know I do a good bit of TV and Gareth's done a good bit over the last 10 or 12 years or more as well. Like, but, you know, going back to whenever I maybe did your show for the first time, I wouldn't have been doing TV too long.
You were brilliant.
Yeah, but I mean, it's an amazing
venison dish.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah?
It's one of the better dishes I ever
know. No,
yeah.
You were super. And I remember the crew saying,
Because, you know,
when you go to a chef's kitchen, they're not used to TV.
Yeah.
You were just yourself. You were brilliant and you were fun. Your food was
delicious. Well, I think you have to be, what I mean? But
be yourself.
Yeah, be yourself. But it's unbelievable what that means to me, what that meant to me and to the owners of Viewmount House.
Oh,
it's the holy grail, like, to be on a show with you. I got to be honest with you. You know what I mean? I always thought I would have saw you at the Chateau for a sneaky night or two, actually.
Yeah. Look, I couldn't afford it. I'm from Gavin.
Yeah. Ah, geez, no, wouldn't it cost you?
I'm only joking.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm sure, like, did you ever come across anybody, though, that never did TV and they freeze up, like, or had you had to guide anybody through that?
Oh, yeah.
I'd say you've had a couple of horror stories.
You do. Not many.
Because I know many is just a good friend. I won't name them here now and throw them under a bus, but I know I got a few on MasterChef over the years, and they chat about food all day.
Yes.
Brilliant chefs.
That's it.
The camera zooms around and they said...
They lose it.
The air just
so
left.
Natural.
Their air left their body.
From a service point of view, like to have a camera crew. And
you know,
I mean, through the years, I've had loads of different camera crews, and especially if they're there for service. I mean...
Yeah.
It's really in the way, and then you're trying to get everybody to continue to cook for the guests, because ultimately the
and be focused on what
yeah,
we're
yeah,
doing.
Yeah, you're right.
Not sound like a, you know, like a lunatic.
Gary, your question is interesting, because I remember doing one in Spain and we turned up the crew. The guy couldn't speak Spanish, or English, and I couldn't speak Spanish. He was like Dumb and Dumber. But then there comes a situation that you communicate through food.
Yeah.
So I'd explain what he was doing. We talk, and he was a lovely guy. He was humble. But that was a tricky situation, and also for the viewers to...
Because you've invested the time. I mean, you plan, your producers plan out where you're going, what you're doing. Yeah, well, I mean, you can imagine it would throw everything into chaos. Because it's expensive to be keeping a full crew in another country, more days, and what, changing flights.
Doing this pod, what it's shown us, we originally, when this idea came around, we thought we were just going to be talking to chefs all the time. And we've only spoken to a couple of chefs.
That's brilliant.
And Mark, and then Mick from...
And the other hand, we've learned that we should do some homework, because we literally never do. We never prepare for
But what I was going to say was...
Natural.
Everybody has a story, and like, they'd come in and say, oh, I don't really, and there's not really too much around food, and you get to maybe talk about when they're growing up, and they just light up. And I suppose that's something, certainly what's kept me around the world of food for as long as it has, that ingredients, being around the table, making people happy, which is ultimately what our job is, right?
Isn't it a lovely feeling?
You know,
well, restaurant people enjoying it, and that's what it's all about. Oh, you know, you couldn't beat that.
Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast,
giving you a helping hand with your food frustrations.
Go Loud sounds better with us. Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Subscribe for free on the Go Loud app and never miss an episode.
Go Loud sounds better with us.
And what about Daddy, Nev, and then with the twins, with the wee dudes? How
the wee dudes?
They're 12.
Does guys, one eat everything and one eat nothing?
You know what?
Or how does it work?
I always say this to customers. They always ask me, what are the twins like? Will they be chefs? First of all, you never force anyone in, as long as they enjoy cooking and enjoy food. But like, they'd come into the restaurant, they'd have half portions, they're eating things that I wasn't eating when I was 12. Like calamari, I'd have thought they were onion rings.
I know.
You know, it is incredible the way food has changed for young people. There's absolutely, because we've done quite a bit of traveling, and they've tasted so many different foods. Like, my son has a steak medium rare. Like, God, I remember I was growing up, it was all well done steaks. Lovely to see that. So it is. So they are enjoying the food.
I had my rant one night at home a few months ago, and nobody would eat a spud, and I cracked up, and I was like, going, geez, we're not fucking Italian. Why does nobody eat spuds this house? You know what I mean? And they're just, you know, it's all pasta. I mean, I remember a time, like, my cousin Paul, I remember going home to Mammy going, oh, Mammy, we might bring Paul up tomorrow for dinner. She goes, what are you talking about? I goes, his Mammy's making a meat spaghetti bolognese. It's not fair. I was crying, because I felt the poor her should be getting a couple of spuds, you know what I mean? And I was like, spaghetti was just alien to us, you know what I mean? And it's such well, my wee girl Cora eats now, and sure, the Marker's her favourite place to go for something to eat, you know what I mean? She loves going to the Marker.
I think even our profession has just totally changed with mobile phones. People see into our world much more. Where before, and we even spoke about this with Mick when he was in last week, that chefs are much more open to sharing recipes, letting each other stage in each other's kitchens. And thankfully, that the persona of our jobs has changed. No, I never thought that about around you. You never seemed that, no one ever spoke about like ill temper or all everybody speaks about is hospitality. And I think it's the biggest compliment I can pay. And then,
wow. Well, that's very kind.
And I've spoken about it a couple of times on here, but we need to talk more about that. Like, a life in food is one that's filled with joy. And if it is what you want to do, go and do it.
That's
equally, if you're not into it, don't do it. Go and be an accountant or a bricklayer.
I think you need to be really into it, though, to prosper, you know, because it is a hard graft, isn't it? But I think you could say that about any career, you know what I mean? Like, if there isn't
the question I was leading into there, you could have quite easily set where Ed Chef is sitting there.
Ed Chef.
You're some spinner of the decks, which I never knew about you until COVID.
I know.
You're a DJ.
No, DJ. No, I'm not a DJ.
Yeah, you are.
I'm a music enthusiast.
Yeah, you know, I DJed for 4 years in Boston.
You did.
I know, I've been meaning to tell you a bit, but I wanted to tell you,
What?
So I was a captain of the football team in Boston, and Tom, this guy had a company.
I love this, man.
And he came to me one day, and he goes, guys, he goes, I want you to DJ. And I goes, I don't know the first fucking thing about DJ. And he goes, I'm not DJing, no. And he goes, you come in here with the boys after every game on a Sunday, goes, come in here someday when the bar's not open on early on a Monday and we'll teach you for two or three weeks. And when I saw it, now I wasn't doing records, it was Denon's or whatever I was using, but I was music mad. And sure enough, he taught me how to do it. And I did it for years in Boston on nights off and different stuff.
But how was that work for you? Like, shocked me, first of all.
I know.
The type of music that you listen to.
Can I be honest with you? I didn't talk about it for maybe 20 years because I have about 3,000 vinyl and it's all 90 cents. I used to go up to Dublin once a month.
But the 90s was the rave generation,
it.
You know what I mean?
And you see, when the restroom was quiet and a wedding's in a Sarah, they used to go into a local nightclub called Mirage, or the River Club wasn't renamed. And there was about maybe, say, 2,000 people. It was a big gig.
Wow.
I used to pay the last hour for free. Never got paid, got in free. And I just absolutely loved it. And I love the music because, you know, in a kitchen...
Is that where you met Imelda? When you're in one night?
I met her in CP's in Galway. That's another story.
Yeah.
But I wasn't DJing.
Classic gaff.
But I used to come up every kind of once a month and buy the vinyl.
Up the tower or somewhere?
I went to Abbey Diss and I went to Music Power in Temple Bar.
Right.
My first record was Felix, Don't You Want My Love. That was the first one.
Oh, crack.
But so I just fell in love with the music. And I used to record tapes and sell the tapes in Enniskillen and in Dublin. And then that would pay for some of the records.
Brilliant.
So then when I went to work in Luxembourg and Germany, I get some trance and hard house and different stuff like that.
Wow.
And then when I was 21, I got decks for my birthday. My mum and dad, there were £900 Technics, 1210s, with a mixer, made to fit.
Man, anybody with Technics was a legend.
Oh, I'm telling you. These were brilliant.
Belt drives, were they?
No, direct drives.
Direct drives. I was going to say the two ways.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The real deal.
Yeah.
There's a tear welling up.
I'm sorry. He's the real deal.
The greatest moment of my life.
You music enthusiast, remember that. I'm not a DJ. But I do love the music. And I never spoke about it. All the records lay up in the attic. And then Mamela got the decks revamped, new needles, new mixer. And I bought them all down during COVID.
Let you horse you out into the garage
or
something.
Can I be honest with you, it was Deck Pierce. Listening to him on a Friday night.
I know.
We had no work for 8 months.
Well, it was my older brother, Pierce. I love Deck. Good villa man, too. Good
man.
And
a gentleman.
My older brother, you get this random text on Friday night, goes, get today FM on quick, and it'll be a stonker from back in the 90s. You know what I mean? And you can nearly picture the Blackyard and we would have been at in the Milford Inn or the Grill in Letterkenny or up in Kelly's Port Rush. You probably went to Kelly's, did you?
And Kelly's was DJ X-ray. He was mental.
Oh, yeah. Sweet Jesus. Kelly's was a spot.
Great memories.
How often do you play music now?
Yeah, sometimes when I go home, like after service or like on a Sunday when we're closed, which is great, go out for a few hours, play some tunes, back buying some vinyl, you know, old
school.
Deadly. It's great.
And you close Sunday and Monday now or just Sunday and Monday?
I have to clarify, Imelda hates the music.
Right.
Absolutely does not like it at all. So what I do is
turn it up to number 11.
Well, you know, we both got supportive wives as well, so we completely understand.
Yeah, you do.
And if you can't hear the sarcasm in my voice there, believe me, it's sarcasm.
But lads, you'll agree, you need something outside this world of food that we live in, that we love with our hearts and we do what we do. And music is my little fix. And I've always listened to it and enjoyed it. And it's just something I got great pleasure from.
Good man. And I suppose, look, we got to touch on the partnership with Dunn's because from the outside, I mean, from the inside, because we use it. I mean, we were chatting about it off air, but it seems to have been a marriage made in heaven. Like, I mean, it really does seem to be, you've brought Dunn's to a whole other level.
Well, I suppose I'm with them 10 years and, you know, they're very good people. First of all, they really respect me as a brand and as a chef and what we've done in Black Lion and Margaret Heffernan and Anne. They're great people. Mm. They work exceptionally hard. What I like about Simply Better, first of all, because I'm with them longer, it's a very clean range. They're supporting local small producers in Ireland, obviously, more or less, and in Spain and in Italy. So it's an amazing range. Clean is hard to get in food, as we both know.
Yeah.
And it's about getting people cooking delicious food at home, which is what. So then during COVID, you know, we'd no work to say. I was doing the videos on my phone with Imelda. And Miss Heffern said, would you think about doing a cookware range? And I said, God, I'd never thought of that.
Yeah.
And she said, if it's not good enough for you to use in your school and in your restaurant, we won't be selling it, but it's got to be affordable.
Yeah.
That was the base. And when I heard that, I said, okay, it's not going to be cheap and cheerful. It's going to be really good quality.
Yeah.
And I think we have.
Genuinely. It's absolutely fabulous.
Really good, because a lot of the small producers that we'd meet at Bloom around the country, you'd know a lot of them. You know, Killowen Farm, which are baked.
Oh, unbelievable.
Based in Wexford. Beautiful, you know, yogurt.
The yogurt's unbelievable.
You know, so. There's no kind of milk powder in their yogurt. It's milk from their farm. Even on their fruit compotes, it's very clean. It's Irish fruits. They're the kind of base that they all set. You know, they're in Simply Better and Dunn's. They never compromise in shelf life.
Yeah,
it's about clean. It's about affordability. It's about good, good, wholesome, fresh food that tastes delicious. And they're the food heroes. So that's what it's all about. Just nurturing these small producers. Yeah. We're nervous. And I think definitely if you were to ask me, the best country was in Italy. They protect what they have with their BGI, you know, which is protected geographical indication. And, you know, we've only maybe 12 or 14 producers in the whole of Ireland. We have amazing producers. Mm. So it does take a producer 4 years to get that. Mm. And something maybe the Irish consumer isn't aware of, just the process, that it's like the blah, it's only produced in water. Not in cabin.
Yeah.
It's,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like Anglesey salt just recently got up before Christmas. And the grass.
Irish beef's just about to get it. I mean, I'm doing the Paris launch.
Yeah.
It was,
which
was
is
supposed to be.
Amazing.
It's not ready, but it's only just got.
Those things have been in place in Italy as the example. That's been going on for hundreds of years.
Yeah.
To protect that. And when you're lucky enough to travel and see it.
And that's why if you notice, I suppose on the TV shows, it's like prosciutto, the Parma ham, a quarter of the pack has got the crown on it. Mm. It has to be age matured for a minimum of 12 months.
Yeah.
So they're really particular about that, even with the traditional balsamic. I saw your lovely balsamic. Yeah. It has to be in a small bottle, age for 12 years, and then small woods. And it's just, they mentioned the consortium, like the Parmesan cheese. They are very clever.
Yeah.
They have more producers with PGI logo than Italy has than France and Spain put together.
Wow.
That's amazing. They're clever.
Yeah, they really have. I mean, they have a deep-rooted love. I mean, you could say the same about Ireland, but that really is an ingredient appreciation society right there as
a
government.
It's gone generation to generation, and you have to admire and respect that.
Yeah.
You know, we have great producers, great ingredients here. I think, as you said, Gareth, it's getting better and better. And it's down to us all to be proud of what we are, what we do, to champion it. That's the word. And like today, now before I came into you, like we were meeting Watts for Pudding from Kilmessan.
Mm-hmm.
So they're great people and they're using good Irish butter, clean ingredients, lovely kind of fresh desserts, rice pudding, sticky toffee pudding. They're just one of the producers that we met today. So I find that really interesting and inspiring. And the fact that you have that relationship, you know, with the small producer, you know, for them to get onto to Dunn stores, 130 stores, like that's incredible.
Yeah, it's a big scale up. The scale up is a big thing, isn't it?
It really is.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
So I love it. I enjoy it. And I've learned an awful lot about food, guys, and that I can talk about even when I'm doing demos or in the cookery school. I'm very proud of the association with Simply Better and the cookware. Timing is everything. More and more people reconnected with food after COVID.
Oh, right.
What was the main thing they were doing? They were eating. They were cooking at home. So I think that really just clicked with
people.
That's
here to stay as well.
I think so. I definitely think so, Gareth. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah. So look, we normally wrap things up, Nevin. Well, we used to do cookbook. We're going to do Desert Island Dinner. What is your dream 3-course meal?
Well, we know a pan you're going to cook.
What is your dream 3-course meal if it was your last meal?
I want a 9-course taste of meal. I want a chestnut and mushroom soup with some cave truffle. And then I think I'd like some pan-fried scallops with caramelized pork cheek. Could be gorgeous.
That's not too
different
shabby.
Different textures of maybe pumpkin or cauliflower, something like that. How are we working?
Yeah, it's not
them
too bad.
Then a little piece of turbot, maybe stuff with some braised beef cheek, a nice little set mushrooms with gorgeous red wine sauce.
Perfect, like that.
Then to cleanse that jade, foie gras. We'll have a little bit of pan-fried foie gras, so.
So why not? You're looking at your foie gras sister over there.
And then we'd have a nice little palate cleanser, a ginger beer with maybe some passion fruit. Then for dessert, it's got to be beef. Two ways. Nice medium rare fillet, cream mushrooms, red wine sauce, braised short rib.
Oh,
creamy mashed potatoes. Hold on now, I'm finished.
Oh, finished. Man.
Then I'm going to have pre-dessert. I'm going to have a nice kind of like a pina colada. So kind of like Malibu, coconut, those kind of flavors.
Grass gird stuff all over.
I love it. Got to have a cheese platter with some nice crackers and some nice chutney, and then a lovely chocolate fondant with maybe kind of like a cool swan or ice cream.
Chocolate
truffle, baked mandolins, nice flat white. I'm going to tie a full belly and happy man.
And then
we have a matching wine with that, guys. What do you think, Gary?
If you can get up the stairs and McNeen's to bed after that, you're a stronger man than me.
You have a good strong fireman. Here's some crack.
Nevin, thanks a million for coming in. Hey, it was brilliant to see you. And thanks so much.
No, thank you both. Lovely to see you and continued success, lads.
Okay, so now it's over to our resident DJ, Ed Sheff, to jump in with another part.
Mr. San Sebastian himself.
You're still smarting on that one.
It's our culinary conundrum section, the bit where we hear from you, the listener.
Yes, we had a load of questions in, so I'm going to try and rattle through these. I just love the show. I've caught every episode so far. Each Wednesday, I look forward to a new one dropping. I could always have considered myself a decent home cook, but since listening, I've picked up so many more cool tips and tricks. So thank you very much for upskilling me. I have a couple of questions for you guys. Right. With the days getting brighter and longer, I'm thinking already of moving from stews, casseroles, and curries to lighter dishes. I love salads, but find them low on satiety. Can you each suggest a recipe for the most deliciously tasty and textured salad? One that is filling as a one-plate dish, ideally plenty protein. This gal's got a big appetite. And then we'll get to the next question after. So
I'm happy to jump in first here because I'll give you one of my favorite summer salads. And Gary has given a couple of variations for this, but it's called a panzanella.
Right.
So a panzanella salad is a very, very, very delicious thing because it uses up old bread. It's a Tuscan dish. So if you have some sourdough that's a day old, even better, or a couple of days old, I think it's better just to take the very outer crust off and then just pop it onto a tray, drizzle it with some nice olive oil, couple of cloves of garlic, and pop it into a preheated oven at 160 degrees, and you're going to make some croutons. Those croutons are going to then become vessels for flavor. So after you take them out of the oven, you let them cool down, you're going to make a big tossed salad. And in there, you're going to put some char-grilled roast peppers, you're going to put some tomatoes, a little bit of red onion, some more olive oil. You can, if you want, put some capers or anchovy in there if you wish, or if that's not your bag, don't put them in. Lots of chopped basil. And then some of that delicious vinegar there.
Looking across here because we
brought a bit of culinary.
Villa Manadori.
Yeah, so it's vinegar that, if you've been listening to the show. So just a nice vinegar. You dress the salad with that. Normally a red wine vinegar, but a vinegar will, like, that will happen. And then you throw in your croutons. And what happens is when the salt starts hitting the tomato and the basil and everything, it will make them bleed ever so slightly. But rather than it all turning into this mushy puddle, those croutons that you made start drinking up all of that moisture, and you're left with this wonderful textured salad, which was, I think, what she asked for there, something with texture. And then for me, I would be grilling a little bit of salmon or a steak or a piece of chicken onto the barbecue, and that panzanella salad, pop it in the middle of the table. It won't last long because it will get demolished.
It's really beautiful. Well, I'm going to go with an El Clasico and a chicken Caesar.
Oh, yes.
I absolutely love. And the key to a good Caesar salad is the dressing. Make no bones about it. Get the dressing right. Do not leave out the anchovies. Even if you don't think you like anchovies, you do. You really do. Because a little,
chop them really fine.
Extremely fine. Like, I mean, you can even blitz them if you're worried about texture. Put two, even say if you're using about 100, 150 mils of mayonnaise to make it, you know, if you don't want to go down the egg yolk route and make it, mayonnaise, two anchovies, a little bit of garlic, salt, pepper, and you can play around with that. Different versions, Parmesan in there as well, obviously. There's loads of different recipes, play around. But honestly, get the Caesar dressing right, you get the salad right. I love grilled, like, or barbecued, that sort of charred feel on the chicken as well. So you say you love protein, you want to get a good, like, grilled chicken or a prawn skewer. You can skewer up some prawns. It's really, really nice. Depending on how hungry you are, you can put as many as you want on a skewer, barbecue them, or do them under a grill or a salamander.
How's your baby, Jim?
I like BB Jam actually, because the hearts are crispier, you know what I mean, and you break them up. I don't chop them up too small. I like to leave them that they're quite dense in a way. And
your technique that you shared a few weeks ago about shocking the lettuce. So remember, Gary spoke about shocking the carrot and the celery. So you basically fill up a big bowl of water with loads of ice.
Oh yeah.
And then you just pick your lettuce leaves and drop them into that iced water. And it basically makes them even more crispy.
Yeah.
And buy yourself a little lettuce spinner. Spin your lettuce, break it rather than chop it into a bowl. Dress it with that dressing.
Yeah, and that dries it and croutons. Gets it even more crisp. Yeah, and your croutons. And one wee tip I'd always say with croutons is your best friend is onion salt and garlic salt. If you toss your croutons in with olive oil, sprinkle them with an onion salt and a garlic salt, not a regular salt.
On a Pringle road, you're bringing us down here, like.
Tell you, man, I don't mess around, man. When I start on it, I'm all over it. You know.
Second part. I'm hosting an upcoming dinner party. I'm happy enough with my trusty starter and mains choices: soup and braised lamb shank. But I would like advice on what to make for dessert. I want to make something a bit impressive, a bit different. I'm kind of classy, so Viennetta out of a dirty sock won't cut it, Gary. Maybe Gareth could take this one. Only kidding, Gary. This comes in from Mayo. So, yes.
They know the strength.
An impressive dessert.
Making. Do you know what I absolutely love is a tiramisu?
Yeah.
You know? Now, the only thing I will say here, right, is if you're making a soup as a starter and a lamb shank as a main course,
tiramisu on a pillow,
you're going to have to go, you're going to have to go super, super light. I'm going to say a Mr. Freezer or a loop-de-loop because fuck me, if you're still standing after a bowl of soup and a lamb shank, good on you. Maybe a panna cotta or something really, really light. A lemon posset actually might be beautiful. Yeah, a lemon posset is absolutely beautiful. I mean, you Google a recipe. I don't want to give you, it's a real, it's,
cream, it sugar, and lemon sugar.
Couldn't be a simpler thing to make. The only thing I'd tell you is finish it with some fresh raspberries. Do it in a little small pot. If you buy any of the, is it Killowen Farm yogurts, shout out to them. Their yogurts are out of this world. Keep the little glass jars. If you're planning on making the lemon posset, rip off the packaging or the paper that's around it, put them through your dishwasher, sterilize them, make your lemon posset. It sets in the fridge. Take it out about an hour before you want to serve it, or 45 minutes before you serve it, to let the chill come out of it. A few fresh raspberries on top, maybe a little sablé biscuit as well for texture. It's almost like a little French style biscuit or cookie that's beautiful with a creme brulee. Anything that's soft, like a posset or a brulee texture, you then need to bring in some texture just for that balance. And that's what I would do with such a heavy starter and main course.
Only just because I was talking about them a few minutes ago. I don't know when you're having this, but like a strawberry tart is something that's very nice to make. And I would even say, buy a tart shell case in the supermarket if you're worried about your pastry skills.
You're all about the strawberries today, aren't you?
Well, I just thought I'd throw it in there. And then all you're going to do is make a very simple creme patisserie, which is just like a custard. It sounds very technical to do, but it's like a custard that's thickened with a little bit of corn flour. There's a million recipes online, and you put that in the bottom of the tart and then put some of those wonderful Wexford strawberries on the top. Dust it with a bit of icing sugar, and that's it. And really, or if you can't find, if you don't want to go down the road of a tart shell, you can even buy a flan base that they buy. I'm a big, big advocate that when I cook at home, I want to just make sure that things are convenient, it happens on time, and I can spend as much of my time with my guests. I don't want to be standing in the kitchen for late.
Good point.
Trying to, so make your life.
And on that note, another wee sneaky quick one, a frozen raspberry eaten mess. We did. I saw Louise do this a while, but if you freeze raspberries, right? I have it on a menu in Paris. It's amazing. And buy meringue nests. In fact, when you actually buy a meringue nest, right? They're not as good a meringue as what you would make. So they're very dry. Yeah. But a dry meringue is your best friend when it comes to eating mess.
Oh, that's interesting.
So basically, you're just looking at two nests per person. Get a couple of nice wee funky martini glasses, right? And that's all you got to do. Break them up, make a vanilla mixture of 50% mascarpone, 50% cream, loads of fresh vanilla, maybe a tablespoon of icing sugar. Whip that up, fold that cream through your crushed meringue nests, and then right at the death, throw in a couple of handfuls, depending on how many people are that you're feeding. Throw in a few handfuls of frozen fresh raspberries, just literally from the store into the freezer, and they break down as you're mixing them, and the texture is just beautiful. So it is, you know what I mean? Really light as well.
They're easy desserts that are very achievable at home.
Yeah.
Neither of you are wearing headphones, but I want to apologize to the listener because there was definitely a moment throughout that my stomach, I could hear
it was a shout out.
Clear as day.
Yeah, yeah.
Rumble. In the jungle down here. So that actually definitely came through. I'll try and edit it out, but maybe it's a compliment. Ellie, it's a compliment to both of you. That was stunning. Anyway, that was two. We're on to our third and final one. This comes in from Christy. Love the show. This is a Michelin star question. Are Michelin stars given out a lot cheaper in the UK or abroad? I watch a lot of cooking shows, i.e. MasterChef, Great British Menu, etc. A lot of the chefs, with all due respect, seem to be very average and have two or three stars. That comes in again from Christy. What's your take on that?
I'll jump in here and let's say, I think the cooking shows sometimes don't translate to what actually goes on in people's commercial kitchens because it's a very unnatural environment to cook under critique like that. So, and I I've said it before, I'm involved in a lot of judging and competitions I'm in, and people behave differently when they're being judged. So sometimes you see people of very high caliber cooking in these programs and you'd be scratching your head going, Jesus, I wonder why that. And it's just pressure. You know, it's a different type of pressure. They're not in their own kitchen. They're not with their own ingredients. They're not using their own things. So I would never measure a cook by what they're doing on a cooking competition. That's one thing. I've eaten in some really poor Michelin star restaurants on the continent, and I'd walk away and I'd scratch my head thinking, how has that got a Michelin star? And the flip side of that, I've eaten in some incredible restaurants here on our doorstep, and they get overlooked by Michelin time and time again. It's an unsolved mystery that I don't think Gary or I are going to be able to answer. All I do know, and what I will say to you, is don't shy away from going and eating in Michelin star restaurants, but don't also search them out all the time. You know, great restaurants are somewhere that make you feel super comfortable and you love the atmosphere, the food, the service, the ambience, the wine list. You heard Gary there a few minutes ago talking so wonderfully about a place that's close to his heart. And I'll bet you if we dug a bit deeper why Gary loves that so much, it's because where he brings his kids and he has so many amazing memories. Mm. So, you know, Michelin stars are amazing. You know, I keep an eye on what's going on with Michelin, but they're not the be all.
I couldn't add another thing to that. It's absolutely spot on. I mean, there's so many unbelievable chefs freeze on TV, or their cameras are in their own kitchens. They don't really want to be sharing an awful lot of their stuff either. Equally, when you're doing TV, you might pull out the simplest stuff that you're doing, because I've been a part of a load of shows over the last 12, 14 years in Ireland. And when camera crews come in for 10 minutes of footage, they could be there for 12 hours. And all you're seeing is the smallest snapshot.
Well, also they have to lean into the drama. So they have to create some tension.
And they love overreact.
Things have to go wrong.
They love drama and stuff going wrong. And no, Gareth, it's just, there's nothing to add to that. He's hit the nail on the head that, you know, that's not. But, you know, we have a chef in today that you could argue should have had a star 50 times over. He's no real interest in one because he's more interested in his customers. Graham Neville at Dax, Paul Flynn, the tannery. I could go on and on and on. Mr. Fox, I would say. I know the sister restaurant, Doyler Street, got a star. There's so many places in Ireland that are phenomenal. When you go to Michelin star places, I think with Michelin, right, I think the country comes in to, you know, like they get a baseline of where the standard is. You know what I mean? It's not a global standard. It could be a national standard in a way. I mean, I ate a Michelin star one in Iceland, and it was fucking horrendous on so many levels that I'll never forget it to the day. That was shocking. Wow. And you come away from a restaurant. You come away from a restaurant like that. I'm not going to name it. You know what I mean? I cannot begin.
You
to
couldn't
tell you
it's in Iceland.
How bad?
Literally.
Yep. How bad it was. It was just insanely shit.
Wow.
And you just shake your head at,
but also, like, people. I mean, some of my favorite food memories are in Michelin star restaurants. Things happen in these restaurants that you go, wow, you know. From,
it's like the Oscars. We just had the Oscars. Like, just because you've won the Oscar for Best Picture, there's loads that haven't. Better films.
It's like Chef of the Year. Or
that they mentioned the UK, because there's a serious caliber of cooking going on over there, especially in London.
And like, unbelievable.
There's amazing restaurants in the UK now. It wasn't always the case. And Ireland,
I would say, Gareth, London's the epicenter of food around the world. London, it's New York, there. Paris. Yeah, it's between the three.
San Sebastian is up there, and, you know, Barcelona has amazing restaurants in it. And, you know, the Nordic Circle, like in Denmark, and all these places have incredible restaurants. And really, there's loads of
and Dublin
restaurants all around the place. You know, like, I mean, what Mick is doing is like, and what goes on in the rest of our Mitchell, like Evo's and everywhere else.
Yeah.
It's like cutting edge. Like, it's really cutting edge. So these restaurants are the Ferrari dealers of the restaurant world, normally. They're selling.
And then the rest is maybe rolling in Maserati. You know what I'm saying?
Just
parking at the front, throwing the keys.
But what I'm saying, like, they're really dealing in the very top end of ingredients, wine, spirits. Like, they're up there, you know? And then some of the 2 and 3 stars are up at 2 or 3 star because what they're doing is so left to center.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and that's the thing. So I would say if you're into Michelin, you really need to
decide what type of food you like. Do you like stuff that's really cutting edge, or do you like stuff that's really classical? And the Michelin cater for both of those things. So do your research, because the other thing I will say, I've yet to eat in a Michelin star restaurant that hasn't bled and cost me a packet. So that's the reality with it. But you're paying for the linen, the service, the amount of people that are there.
Like, and would the prices go up naturally as soon as you get...
When you get a star, you're like...
They go up.
Adding zeros.
Numbers go up. Well, normally they're up there already, but you know, when you move into a second star, sometimes...
I have a few friends that have reservations in a few of the new star places, actually, and they all got emails
to say
that... The same
due to the current economic
crisis of us being amazing, all of us looking, you're getting another 40
reason
flips
from
on top.
Bahamas, the starter's gone up
on top of the already expensive one. We're just about to give you another little doing.
Well, listen, thanks to all the listeners sending in the great questions. Keep them coming at food@goaloudnow.com.
So, Nevin Maguire, what a cracking interview. We knew it was going to be,
It was
brilliant. We've been trying to get him for as long as we have.
Yeah, we meant to do it before Christmas and then had to cancel one a few weeks ago. So, thank God he gave us a bit of time. Yeah, fair play to him. Cause
a bit around music with him, man. I remember that, like, over COVID when that came out. And, like, I was like, oh, Nevin has a vinyl collection. And now, like, you won't mind me saying this, but I was thinking it was going to be, like, country music or... No, certainly didn't know it was going to be trance.
But he's a proper aficionado as well, because like
he's
probably a better collection than Ed over there, does he? Of the dance tunes, anyway. Oh, that
was low dig.
For his collection of Big Tom and the Mainliners.
No, it was brilliant to get him in, man. You know, just an absolute sweetheart of a man. You know, a really generous chef, a really generous human being. Look, he brought us a lovely bottle of Cool Swan each as well. Tough shit, Ed, you didn't get one. And just a good guy, man. And he's always been generous with his time over the years to all of us.
The other thing that we broke to him was your little bit of news. And
yeah,
Darius has a big change.
Au revoir, Paris.
He's coming to the home tour, and he's going to be cooking just outside of Dublin in an amazing 5-star hotel.
Yeah, I'm taking over as executive chef of the K Club. I'm over the moon, man, yeah.
Us as a community of chefs that, you know, we were only all together only a couple of weeks ago at a Eurotalk event, but we're all delighted for you. Very, very well deserved. Big job.
Thank you. Yeah, big job. Yeah, look, yeah, they have a brilliant GM there, Paul Heary. He's got a great track record, brilliant places.
As you know, I worked with Paul.
Yeah, you worked in the Merion with Paul, yeah. So, look, I mean, I've had a soft spot for the K Club for a long time, you know. I mean, myself.
You spend a lot of your time digging yourself out of hamburgers down.
I'm usually splattering sand all over my face in a bunker around the north course or the south course, me and Moriarty. Mark and I like the golf fair the odd time. I've got a good few friends actually working there in the golf end of things. I've got the old boys. So, no, really prestigious property, 5-star, and delighted. 5+ years I've been in the Chateau in Paris, and I'm over the moon to be moving home, yeah.
I'm sure the family are delighted to get you back as well.
Yeah, hopefully tucking in the wee dudes a few nights more a year than what I have been, yeah. So no, I'm over the moon, Gareth, yeah.
Well, look, best of luck with it. You don't need it. You're going to absolutely kill it. I know you've been looking for something for the past while.
So yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank
you. All of us here, and I'm sure the listeners will be the same. And on that, I was just going to say to the listeners, if you are enjoying the pod, don't be afraid to give us an old comment or a subscribe wherever you're listening to us, because it really helps. We're blown away by the amount of messages that we're getting and the questions. We're loving getting them in, but...
Spread the word.
Yeah, well, the listenership is growing, and the lads upstairs are telling us that people are coming back, so that's what we want. So now it's about just getting the word on the street, and Gary and I like shouting from the rooftop across our socials, so we'll probably do a little bit more of that. So
yeah.
Look, thanks a million for tuning in, and we'll talk to you next week.
Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Subscribe for free on the Go Loud app and never miss an episode.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.